Why, hello. This is Katie and Kay, Carbondale Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond. It's time again for Everything Under the Sun. I'm your host, Raleigh Burley, and today joining me in studio, we have the one and only Gus Richardson.
Hello there.
And our guests today are John Bruna with the Way of Compassion Dharma Center.
Hello, good to be with you.
And Geshe Lekshi, who is a visiting Tibetan with the Gaden Shartse.
Ganden Shartse, yeah.
Ganden Shartse.
Monastery.
Monastery in India. And we're going to get into a little bit of that. So welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And so since Monday, there have been visiting Tibetan monks installing a sand mandala in the Third Street Center. We stopped by with our high school journalism program yesterday to watch a little bit of that in action. We saw the market set up there, and we were handed a schedule of events. So definitely want to let folks know that there is plenty more happening, including a healing ritual tonight. There's a Tibetan Momo dinner and cultural night tomorrow with the monks. There's a butter sculpture, calligraphy, and sand painting activity for kids and adults on Saturday, as well as a green Tara empowerment, and then the final ceremony dissolving the sand mandala on Sunday. So a lot more happening. And Lekshe, you mentioned that you're visiting 17 states and different cities each week, so this is one stop along a long journey. Tell us how it's been so far.
Yeah, it's been a very successful tour in America. We have visited 17 different states, and then most of the time we change a city every after a weeks, so that we have visited many different cities and the very different kind of like cultures and traditions, environment, way of lifestyles, and the peoples in a different kind of like their kind of livings. So it's been a really wonderful to be here in America and seeing all those diverse of great American nations.
And what is the mission behind this tour?
So our goal is, so we spread the message of loving kindness and compassion. We also spread the message of how you can be really work on the self-realizations and all those kind of like concept of the one which we call wholesome and the richness of your body, speech, and mind. So how you can really train and practice and be aware so that you can live a happy and peaceful life. So that's one of our goals to in our tour. And also other thing is whatever the contributions and donations that we receive, we bring back to our monastery where we have 1,700 monks. And so we, all those monks, their for whole life, their the foods, their shelter, their educations, all their tuitions are free. So that's why we need our administration, who is really working on that very strongly, to be kind of like needed with the financial things, so that those contribution goes back to our monastery to able to run the monastery.
Mm-hmm. And so this isn't the first time that the monks have visited Carbondale. John, could you tell us a little bit more about this tradition?
Yeah, absolutely. So some of you may know I used to be a monk at Ganden Shartse Monastery, so and used to actually guide some of the tours. And what's really been amazing about my experience with the monks is that these tours have been coming since the 80s. And what I've seen around the country is the ripple effect. Mm. You know, it's has very little sometimes to do with being Buddhist, but much more around what Geshe was talking about, around loving kindness, compassion, things that have been spread through the country. Today, MIT has a whole center dedicated to ethics and transformative values. Stanford University has a whole center for compassion and studies on compassion, that as a result of these tours and His Holiness the Dalai Lama coming out into the West, you get to see ripples in terms of how we as human beings get to live with more mindfulness, compassion, kindness, and I think that it's pretty hard to measure the imprint of Tibetans coming out of Tibet and finding their way here.
Mm-hmm. When we talk about all these concepts like compassion and mindfulness, could you give us kind of insight into what a life lived without those principles would look like? Like, what is the opposite of living according to those values?
Yeah, suffering. You know, it's one of the interesting pieces. I also happen to work in the world of psychology and counseling and therapy. And what's very clear is that the more that we think of ourselves, kind of a me and mine attitude, the more mental and emotional suffering and stress people have in their lives. The more that people recognize that they're interdependent with others, that in fact, everything that you have in your life, everything you have in life, everything about you, every thought that you have, every word that you use, came from others. Hmm. That, you know, the clothing we wear, the food we eat, the thoughts we have, like my body, I didn't create my body. Parents and their parents and everything about you is independence upon others and the world that we live in. And so much mental and emotional suffering and stress comes from this sort of independent thinking, mm-hmm. Which limits the capacity for loving kindness, compassion, connection. And you're going to see, you know, the stress, the worry, the fears, the addictions. You know, I work a lot with addictions field and struggles coming from more of a greed, and not in the greed that we think I'm miserly, but in the greed I don't have enough, I'm not good enough, I'm comparing myself with others, mm-hmm. I'm not as pretty, I'm not as, you know, successful, which is all me-centered mm-hmm. instead of we-centered. And so a life without that connection, the loving kindness, the compassion, the interdependence is one that has really struck our culture. The biggest thing that's come up in all my workshops around the country from virtually all Westerners of all social structures is a self-critical voice that is predominant within our culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that you use that word interdependence. That's mm-hmm. come up for me recently, and it's such a beautiful acknowledgement. Like you said, we didn't create, you know, the food that grows. We can facilitate it growing, but ultimately we're completely dependent on our environment and other living beings.
Yes, you're right. Because the concept of Buddhists is we go with the two principal aspects. One is non-violence through by practicing loving kindness and compassion and all those kind of like wholesome actions. Mm-hmm. And the concept, the another one is the aspects of like that we say the right wisdoms, the wisdom understanding on independent arisings. And how we are dependent, originated with others, and how we, because of that things, so you can able to practice the selflessness nature and can able to really remorse the self-grasping and self-cherishing so that you can live a happy and peaceful life.
And just to be clear on that, self-cherishing is different from self-worth. Mm-hmm. Self-cherishing is a technical term used in sort of a negative view of yourself that needs to be taken care of, whereas self-worth and value is really what we already have, that we're already enough. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Gus, do you have any thoughts or questions?
Yeah. I still don't super get self-cherishing. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah. So self-cherishing, when you think about a me-centered life, I'm right. always comparing others with what they do for me or don't do for me. I like this person because they help me. I don't like that person. Mm-hmm. Everything's me-centered. Like, I'm the most important thing in the world. And as soon as you establish that, then everyone else is not you. Mm-hmm. And now you've got over 8 billion others who are not you, and it's you and them, and you compare yourself with them. If I'm with someone I think I'm better than, then I think I'm doing okay. If I'm with someone who is, you know, pretty cool, now I'm not good enough. And so your whole sense of value and worthiness is in the sense of trying to take care of a kind of a personality or an ego. that is always in comparison and never already just knowing that you're okay, that you are already enough. You're already valuable. You're already worthy. Mm-hmm. And this sort of self-grasping in a sense of I need this need, I need people like me, you know, I'm worried about someone might criticize me. We don't have to have any of that. You're already good enough. You already have self-worth. And then you don't need to prove it to everyone, right?
Sure. And how do you suggest that we let go of this self-cherishing behavior?
How would they let go of self-cherishing behavior, Geshe-la?
So it is a practice. Now you need it. So self-cherishing is the, as we've been, the John Bunner said, that it is not about self-worth. It's about that the things that really makes all those obscurations by just thinking about you and yours and I and me, and then neglecting others. And so because of that kind of process, you are really into a such kind of the causes and condition of sufferings. So that's why how we can really overcome from that is by thinking about selflessness nature. Means that once you are having a mind that how you can adjust and have a concept that equalizing and exchanging self with others, so that once you put yourself the one which is that you are interacting with, so you can able to understand all those kind of condition situation of others, so that you won't only be thinking about your one, because you are also now thinking about others, valuing others, respecting others, and also concerned about others' benefits and others' kind of like welfare. So that's how you can really take a different kind of like a face of yourself by seeing the right and the more genuine ways.
It strikes me that we in this country are raised in a culture that very much veers in toward dependence and comparisons, and I think it's maybe related to marketing, but we're led into insecurities of not having enough, not being enough. And so do you notice a big difference when you're in this country with people's mindset, the way that they, you know, are by default, and all that conditioning that needs to be undone compared to India, for example?
Thank you very much for these questions. For me personally, wherever I have visited in Americas, so the in those areas, most of them, they are very familiar with the Tibetan Buddhist, and they know about the Tibetan Buddhist concept and those things. And I individually, I have never met someone who only think about self. For my concept, being here in America, so America is the only place where you can see is that how they take care of their animals, like pets, dogs and cats, with such a like a love and care. So that's very special. Mm-hmm. So you can see the such a beautiful culture that we have. And also they think about the nature, they think about all those kind of things, that human values, human rights. So that's how I've been very kind of like impressed and very kind of pulled out by all those cultures that we have in America.
Thank you. That's a beautiful reflection.
Yeah, let me kind of share a perspective from just a U.S. American guy and that self-critical voice that we carry with us. And what I've noticed being with Tibetans, Tibetan culture and Buddhist cultures and Southeast Asia and so forth, the idea is you're born, you already have Buddha nature. There's nothing wrong with you. Right. And it's just covered up with sort of afflictions and conditioning and, you know, our sort of human nature. But underneath that, you're pure. Like, you're already pure. Now, we have one where we come in with original sin. And we come in with, you need to prove yourself. And what have you succeeded in? And what degrees do you have? And, you know, the pull yourself up by the bootstrap kind of mentality. As a matter of fact, Wyoming has, you know, the highest rate of suicide per capita. And sort of this whole, you know, mentality of you know, not share your weaknesses, sort of the cowboy way. And so if we, what I've observed in our culture is that self-critical voice not being good enough. And what I've done here is, like, there's not even a word for that in Tibetan language around shame. Like, there's no word for it. It doesn't even make sense in their mind. And yet we deal with a lot of shame, and we deal with a lot of struggle and not being good enough. And so I like to say the most scandalous Tibetan feels pretty good about himself. And I was at a thing, and a guy said, I met that guy. Whereas we can have the kindest human being who's hard on themselves in our culture. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of our biggest struggles here in the West is we just don't know we're good enough. You know, and as you pointed out, all of our marketing, and as well as all that history of sort of Judeo-Christian background that's infused in our culture, I think does a lot to that.
Yeah, to build more on that idea, you really do believe that the idea of original sin and the idea of, you know, Jesus died, so then you can sin and then we can talk about it, but only good people get into heaven, and it's a very specific idea of what being good is. You think that really does affect our U.S. idea about shame?
Yeah. And so I used to be a history teacher, so I go back to Enlightenment ideals and Western culture and how things get in our ethos and our...
Just had my APUSH exam.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. And so it's more of a cultural thing of independence and you know, needing to be good enough, needing to prove yourself. And so where it's not directly maybe related to even, you know, Jesus and Christian faith, those ideas have been imbued in our culture. Right. And so much of the United States is built on that you know, culture as well, which has very good values and good ethics, but also a comparison.
Right.
Yeah.
I'd like to speak a little bit more about some of the offerings, if you two wanted to touch on some of the events that are coming up this evening or over the weekend. Where people can go to get tickets for those things, or if they can just show up. And then also there are these other offerings as well, like personal healings, astrology readings, land blessings.
Yeah, thank you for asking. The website, the Dharma Center's website, which is wocdc.org, so Way of Compassion Dharma Center, you'll see a full list of the schedule. And most of the events you can show up for tonight is a purification and healing ritual that you can just show up for and have a lot of negative karma purified. I think I'm up for that. And tomorrow night, though, is a Momo dinner and cultural event with the monks. So the monks will prepare a traditional Tibetan meal and then share a slideshow of life in the monastery.
Cool.
So for that, you need to register in advance because they need to know how much food to make. And there's, you know, only so much they can do. So tonight, you could go ahead and take a look at that. On the weekend, we have arts, you know, Tibetan art activities. You can try your own sand painting, calligraphy, butter sculpture. It's for kids all the way up to adults, and that's on Saturday afternoon. And then Saturday evening, we have an empowerment of the Buddha Tara, and then Sunday is the dissolution ceremony. The only event you need to register in advance for is the Momo dinner.
Okay.
The warning about Momos is you'll always want Momos.
Momos.
Yeah.
Good one. Anything you'd like to add to that, Geshla?
I think the John almost covered everything. I have nothing to say more about that.
Okay. I'll just say that healing ritual is at 6:30 tonight at the Third Street Center. The dinner tomorrow is at 6. And then I do want to hear more about this kids' activity day. Butter sculpture jumps out to me as something that sounds messy. We mentioned it before we went on the air. Could you describe the tradition of butter sculpting?
So butter sculpture is one of our traditions, because as a Buddhist is also one religion, so in a religion we have many different ritual performance that we do. So in ancient times in India, before the Buddha was there, so people do a ritual by sacrificing the animals. and they do the worship to the gods and the deities and those things. But after the Buddha, because Buddha is a non-violence practitioner, so he, instead of like sacrificing and killing animals, he make a butter sculptures. So through the butter, by putting all those auspicious substances in the butter, and we can offer this as a feast to the deities so that they can rejoice with us and they can bless us with their all those divine energies. So that's how the butter sculpture was founded.
Wow.
And why we say butter? Because in Tibet, it's such a cold area. The low one is 14,000 feet. So that's why the butter never get melt, so you can do anything with the butter. But in India, we mix butter with the wax, so that in India is we have three weather, you can say it's a hot, hotter and hottest. So that's why we must mix the wax with the butter, so that we can keep the shape of the butter sculptures. Mm-hmm. So that's how this is traditions came. And then yes, you are right, when you make a butter, it would be a little messy, because you have to you knead the dough, you have to knead the butters, you need to make a shape, sometimes you use water, so that mess out a little bit. That is really true.
And you use barley flour too.
Yes,
as well.
We use barley flour. Is the barley flour is like a barley roasted flour. Mm-hmm. So that's something that is the best food, the traditional food of Tibetan, that we've been really surviving in such a cold area. So we also use this roasted barley flour to able to offer to the deities, because this is the best one that we have in a Tibetan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what do the sculptures look like? What are people making, animals, or are they making human figures?
So we make a particular shapes. Uh-huh. And so it has to have a two most important one is a round shape one, and the one which is kind of like quite sharpy.
Pointy.
So the round shape, it is actually it symbolizes the all those methods like loving kindness and compassion and all those kind of like perfection of those things that really makes your action more into a wholesome things. And then the pointy shape is something that is, we call it, symbolizes the wisdoms. So the wisdom of like having a discrimination of good and bad, having a discrimination of virtues and non-virtues, and also the wisdoms like seeing the right views to able to make your life fulfilled with such a fortunate being human as a precious human life with all those kind of like freedoms and enrichment that you have, so you can use this for the right for your life to be more successful with the really achievement of your Dharma practices. So that's why the wisdom is the key thing, that it works there. So the pointy shape symbolizes the wisdom. So that's how we, every butter sculptures that we make, we put the round shape and the pointy shape there always.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everything about Tibetan Buddhism is about those two things, wisdom and compassion.
Mm.
The unification of two is how one becomes enlightened.
Mm-hmm.
And so symbolically, that'll be built into everything that they do.
Is there anything that you two want to share about the current political situation with Tibet? And it's a lot to get into, but...
Yeah, well, I just think I'll share briefly that what I've seen and I admire about the Tibetans is their resiliency. As many people are aware of, China invaded Tibet and had destroyed over 6,000 monasteries. Ganden Shartse, which is the original monastery of the whole Gelug tradition, was leveled along with 6,000 other monasteries. And I have pictures in black and white of the monks going to South India where it's hot, they had wool clothes, they'd get sick, there's scorpions, and they rebuilt this tradition in the jungles of South India.
Wow.
And Ganden Shartse Monastery, where Geshe-la lives, was built from the resilience of these Tibetans, and they live in refugee settlements now. There's over 50 different refugee settlements in India that was offered by the Indian government, and mm-hmm. there's a Tibetan government in exile in India. His Holiness Dalai Lama lives there as well. And you want to talk about strength and resiliency. The Tibetan people have been able to maintain this culture to rebuild their monasteries. Ganden in Tibet has been rebuilt even, which is nice to know. You know, I just have to say when I've traveled with them and when I've been with Tibetan monks, their strength, their resiliency, their ability to bring compassion into events and environments, you know, it's just been stunning for me. So I get to see these monks and see how they just cheerfully go along with whatever thing happens. It's quite amazing to watch.
Hmm. Anything you'd like to add?
So my family has a lot of, you know, connection with the political issues, because recently one of my brother, younger brother, who did a self-immolations in India, because the Chinese kind of like a communist oppressions and all those kind of things, that it is very difficult to kind of like take this, and also because understanding of all those kind of like problems and the especially the discriminations, mm-hmm. Being Chinese in China and being Tibetan in the Chinese nations, it's a really big kind of like a discriminations that we are facing. So that's why a lot of issues going on, because as we are monk, we are not that much really into the political kind of like issues and political the involvement. But there are many things going on in Tibet which is very against the human right, against all those religious right, all those the being Tibetan, we have a lot of like problems of cultures, kind of like that cultures, what we call the cultures, that they don't let Tibetans to learn Tibetan, so that's how
they assimilate to Chinese language.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. They're second class citizens in their own country.
Well, unfortunately, we only have about 2 minutes before the next show starts. It sounds like we're only just beginning to scratch the surface. And I would imagine that this Momo Dinner Cultural Night is really a good opportunity for people who want to learn a lot more about this. 6 p.m. tomorrow?
Yes. And we try to balance the cultural stuff where you get to visit with the monks and get to know them with the rituals. So so tomorrow night's a nice time to have a meal and get to visit and get to look inside a day in the life of a Tibetan Buddhist monk.
And that site again is www.wocdc.org.
That's right. Way of Compassion Dharma Center. There you go.
Thank you all for joining today.
Hey, thank you, Raleigh and Gus. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Gus, to be here.